You're listening to media from University Lutheran Church and Student Center. We are a multi-generational, Jesus-centered community of scripture, faith, and grace located in Tallahassee, Florida, on the campus of Florida State University. To learn more and to get connected to other resources, please visit universitylutheranchurch.org. We hope that the next few moments are a time when God speaks into your life by the power of His Holy Spirit about His Son, Jesus Christ.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Together with Jesus. We are going to be reading Mark 5 and 6 today. We're going to be reading it out of the Holman Christian Standard Bible, or the HCSB. Then they came to the other side of the sea, to the region of the Gerasenes. And as soon as he got out of the boat, a man with an unclean spirit came out of the tombs and met him. He lived in the tombs. No one was able to restrain him anymore, even with chains, because he often had been bound with shackles and chains, but had snapped off the chains and smashed the shackles. No one was strong enough to subdue him. And always, night and day, he was crying out among the tombs and in the mountains and cutting himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and knelt down before him, and he cried out with a loud voice, "What do you have to do with me, Jesus, the Son of the Most High God? I beg you, before God, don't torment me." For he had told him, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." "What is your name?" he asked him.
"My name is Legion," he answered him, "because we are many."
And he kept begging him not to send them out of the region. Now, a large herd of pigs was there, feeding on the hillside. The demons begged him,
"Send us to the pigs so that we may enter him."
And he gave them permission. Then the unclean spirits came out and entered the pigs, and the herd of about 2,000 rushed down the steep bank into the sea and drowned there. The men who tended them ran off and reported it in the town and the countryside, and the people went to see what had happened. They came to Jesus and saw the man who had been demon-possessed by the legion, sitting there, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. The eyewitnesses described to them what had happened to the demon-possessed man and told about the pigs. Then they began to beg him to leave their region. As he was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed kept begging him to be with him, but he would not let him. Instead, he told him, "Go back home to your own people and report to them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." So he went out and began to proclaim it in the Decapolis, how much Jesus had done for him, and they were all amazed. When Jesus had crossed over again by the boat to the other side, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the sea. One of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet and kept begging him, "My little daughter is at death's door. Come and lay your hand on her so that she can get well and live." So Jesus went with him, and a large crowd was following and pressing against him. A woman suffering from bleeding for 12 years had endured much under many doctors. She had spent everything she had had and was not helped at all. On the contrary, she became worse. Having heard about Jesus, she came behind him in the crowd and touched his robe. For she said, "If I can just touch his robes, I will be made well." Instantly her flow of blood ceased, and she sensed in her body that she was cured of her affliction. At once Jesus realized in himself the power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and said, "Who touched my robes?" His disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing against you, and you say, 'Who touched me?'" So he was looking around to see who had done this. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came with fear and trembling, fell down before him, and told him the whole truth. "Daughter," he said to her, "your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be free from your affliction." While he was still speaking, people came from the synagogue leader's house and said, "Your daughter is dead. Why bother the teacher anymore?" But when Jesus overheard what was said, he told the synagogue leader, "Do not be afraid, only believe." He did not let anyone accompany him except Peter, James, and John, James's brother. They came to the leader's house, and he saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. He went in and said to them, "Why are you making a commotion and weeping? The child is not dead, but asleep." They started laughing at him, but he put them all outside. He took the child's father, mother, and those who were with him, and entered the place where the child was.
He took the child by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kum," which is translated, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately the girl got up and began to walk. She was 12 years old. And at this they were utterly astounded. Then he gave them strict orders that no one should know about this, and said that she should be given something to eat. He went away from there and came to his hometown, and his disciples followed him. When the Sabbath came, he began to teach in the synagogue, and many who heard him were astonished. "Where did this man get these things?" they said. "What is this wisdom given to him, and how are these miracles performed by his hands? Isn't this the carpenter, the son of Mary, and the brother of James, Joseph, and Judas, and Simon? And aren't his sisters here with us?" So they were offended by him. Then Jesus said to them, "A prophet is not without honor except in his hometown, among his relatives, and in his household." So he was not able to do any miracles there, except that he laid his hands on a few sick people and healed them. And he was amazed at their unbelief. Now he was going around the villages in a circuit teaching. He summoned the 12 and began to send them out in pairs and gave them authority over unclean spirits. He instructed them to take nothing for the road except a walking stick. No bread, no traveling bag, no money in their belts. They were to wear sandals, but not put on an extra shirt. Then he said to them, "Whenever you enter a house, stay there until you leave the place. If any place does not welcome you and people refuse to listen to you, when you leave there, shake the dust off your feet as a testimony against them." So they went out and preached that people should repent. And they were driving out demons, anointing sick people with olive oil, and healing them. King Herod heard of this because Jesus' name had become well known. Some said, "John the Baptist has been raised from the dead. That's why supernatural powers are at work in him." But others said, "He's Elijah." Still others said, "He's a prophet, like one of the prophets." When Herod heard of it, he said, "John, the one I beheaded, has been raised." For Herod himself had given orders to arrest John and to chain him in prison on account of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife, whom he had married. John had been telling Herod, "It is not lawful for you to have your brother's wife." So Herodias held a grudge against him and wanted to kill him. But she could not, because Herod was in awe of John and was protecting him, knowing he was a righteous and holy man. When Herod heard him, he would be very disturbed, yet he would hear him gladly. Now an opportune time came on his birthday when Herod gave a banquet for his nobles, military commanders, and the leading men of Galilee. When Herodias' own daughter came in and danced, she pleased Herod and his guests. The king said to the girl, "Ask me whatever you want, and I'll give it to you." So he swore oaths to her, "Whatever you ask me, I will give you up to half of my kingdom." Then she went out and said to her mother, "What should I ask for?" "John the Baptist's head," she said. Immediately she hurried to the king and said, "I want you to give me John the Baptist's head on a platter right now." Though the king was deeply distressed because of his oaths and the guests, he did not want to refuse her. The king immediately sent for an executioner and commanded him to bring John's head. So he went and beheaded him in prison, brought his head on a platter, and gave it to the girl. Then the girl gave it to her mother. When his disciples heard about it, they came and removed his corpse and placed it in a tomb. The apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all that they had done and taught. He said to them, "Come away by yourselves to a remote place and rest for a while." For many people were coming and going, and they did not even have time to eat. So they went away in the boat by themselves to a remote place. But many saw them leaving and recognized them. People ran there by land from all of the towns and arrived ahead of them. So as he stepped ashore, he saw a huge crowd and had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. Then he began to teach them many things. When it was already late, his disciples approached him and said, "This place is a wilderness, and it is already late. Send them away so that they can go into the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat." "You give them something to eat," he responded. They said to him, "Should we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give them something to eat?" And he asked them, "How many loaves do you have? Go look." When they found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. Then he instructed to have all the people sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in ranks of hundreds and fifties. Then he took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up into heaven, he blessed and broke the loaves. He kept giving them to his disciples to set before the people. He also divided the 2 fish among them. Everyone ate and was filled. Then they picked up 12 baskets full of pieces of bread and fish. Now those who ate the loaves were 5,000 men. Immediately he made his disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side, to Bethsaida, while he dismissed the crowd. After he said goodbye to them, he went away to the mountain to pray. When evening came, the boat was in the middle of the sea, and he was alone on the land. He saw them being battered as they rowed, because the wind was against them, around 3 in the morning. He came toward them walking on the sea and wanted to pass by them. When they saw him walking on the sea, they thought that it was a ghost and cried out, for they all saw him and were terrified. Immediately he spoke with them and said, "Have courage, it is I, do not be afraid." Then he got into the boat with them, and the wind ceased. They were completely astounded because they had not understood about the loaves. Instead, their hearts were hardened. When they had crossed over, they came to the land at Gennesaret and beached the boat. As they got out of the boat, people immediately recognized him. They hurried throughout that vicinity and began to carry the sick on mats wherever they heard he was. Wherever he would go, into the villages, towns, or the countryside, they laid the sick in the marketplaces and begged him that they might touch just the tassel of his robe. And everyone who touched it was made well. Hey everyone, thanks for sticking around. This is the part of the show where we stop and we kind of consider what we've just read. So we're going to be talking about Matthew 5 and 6, and we're going to be taking a look at all of these miracles that Jesus is doing. So we start off with this story of the Gerasene demoniac. So where we've just been is that Jesus has been in the boat with his disciples. The boat was rocking back and forth, and there was a lot of water coming on. Things didn't look so good. Jesus then gets up. He says, "Shush," to the wind and the waves, and they quiet down. And the disciples are like, who is this guy? And so now they are continuing that boat ride. As they continue that boat ride, they end up in this area called the Gerasenes. Now, where this is, we're not entirely sure. We know the general area that it's in, so it's across the Sea of Galilee. It's in this more kind of Gentile area, kind of closer to Tyre and Sidon than what it is to any kind of Judea place. And so, and we know that this is a Gentile place, at least partially because of the story that's coming up. The demon is going to be cast out, and the demon is going to go into a herd of pigs. Now, pigs are unclean animals to Jewish people, and so there certainly wouldn't be pigs that would be raised in the area of Judea, because you just wouldn't have a seller, or you wouldn't have a buyer, rather. The writing here is kind of interesting. When Jesus gets off of the boat, all of a sudden, Mark gives us all of these details that they must have found out later. And so we meet this man who comes out of the tombs. He comes out of the mountains. He sounds like a really scary guy. And all of a sudden, Mark gives us all of this other information that he must have learned later. So there were things like, you know, he had often been bound with chains and tore them apart. And there was no way for them to know that at first meeting this guy. And so all of this stuff is sort of backfilled in. And we get that information, and then we get this information about Jesus having the conversation with the demon. So he has this conversation. He says, yeah, first the demon recognizes who Jesus is, as the demons have been doing in the Gospel of Mark here. And then Jesus actually asks him his name. Now, this is kind of an odd thing for Jesus to do. You know, like, does Jesus know the names of all of the demons? Why is he asking the name? Well, we don't exactly know why Jesus asked, but the response is actually pretty scary. The response is, "We are legion." There's many demons that are within this one man. And as a result of that, we find out that this host of demons, this battalion of demons, perhaps, is asking Jesus to be cast out, but not to be cast out just regularly. This demon wants to be cast out into a herd of pigs. Now, a herd of pigs is going to be an unclean set of animals, and so there's maybe some connection there. But we don't really know why Legion wants to be cast into a herd of pigs. There's plenty of people out there with a lot of conjecture, but honestly, we don't know. But we do know that Jesus does allow for that to happen. He casts the demons out into the pigs, and then the pigs do something odd. They go and basically commit suicide. And so it seems like it's a short-lived win, if it is a win for Legion. But either way, now all of a sudden the man has these demons that are out of him. He's not afflicted by them anymore, and he's in his right mind. And by that time, the herd owners, they run into town, they tell everybody what has happened, and all of the people come back, and they see this guy, and they see that he's in his right mind. He's hanging around with Jesus, and they're wondering what happened. And they actually are so freaked out by this that they ask him to leave. Now, it could be that they were freaked out by it, because if this guy had the power to get rid of this demon, then he certainly has the power to maybe do some terrible things to them. It could be that they really don't like Jesus because he got rid of 2,000 head of swine, which would have been considerable in its cost, I assume. And there's all of those things. And so they tell him to leave. And as they're telling him to leave, there's this interesting moment, because the man who had the demon, who had Legion, all of a sudden asks Jesus, "Hey, I want to go with you." And Jesus does this thing that is unusual for Mark. So we've talked about it before in Mark. There's this this kind of thing that happens in Mark called the Messianic Secret, where Jesus oftentimes will tell people, "Hey, I don't want you to tell where you got healed. I don't want you to talk about my miraculous dealings." And instead, here you actually have Jesus encouraging this man to go into this Gentile area and to tell everybody what God has done for him. And so there's a little bit of a shift here. And it's possible that that shift has to do with the difference between Jesus being in a Jewish area and Jesus here being in a Gentile area, but we're not entirely sure what that is. And so as we continue to move on, Jesus gets back in the boat. He's crossing over to the other side once again, and there he sees a large crowd by the seashore. And so... here we've got a Jewish crowd, so he's crossed over to the other side again. He's back into this Jewish land, and with this Jewish land, you have a synagogue president, somebody who is in charge of the synagogue, probably a small synagogue. Jairus is maybe not quite as intimidating a figure as sometimes you might think a president of a synagogue might be, but still, he's got a little bit of pull. He runs up to Jesus, and he says, "You know, my daughter is sick at death's door. I need you to come, and I need you to heal her." And, you know, it's an interesting statement for this guy who may have been kind of on the fence. It wouldn't be a very popular thing for people to follow Jesus, especially somebody like a synagogue president. But here he's at his wit's end. He doesn't know what to do. And he says, "I know that this guy has healed people. I know he can come to my house and he can heal them." Well, you have then this interesting sandwich of a story. So they start getting going on the way, and then we get another story, a separate story, while they're going on the way. And while you get this separate story, you have this this story of this woman who has a flow of blood. There's probably some kind of internal hemorrhaging, and she just knows that if she reaches out and touches the hem of Jesus' cloak, that she will be saved, that she will have this internal bleeding stop. And she has spent a lot of money trying to get all sorts of different remedies that are supposed to help her. In fact, there's a listing that I ran into a while back of all of the different things that may have been tried, a lot of them having to do with drinking wine and you know, where you drink wine and a prayer that you say before, and you know, do you drink wine with oil in it, and things like that. But all of them pretty much come down to what we would call home remedies, if that. And so she hasn't been getting better. In fact, she's been getting worse. And so she has this faith. She reaches out. She touches the hem of Jesus's cloak, and she gets healed. And it's amazing because Jesus turns around and he says, I felt power go out from me. And he himself is kind of amazed here. And she then says, okay, it's me, after the disciples say, yeah, how are we supposed to know? But there's an interesting thing there where the whole group of people have been crowding around Jesus. And even with all of these people crowding around Jesus, there's only one person who has been saved because of her faith. It's the faith that makes the difference, not the touching Jesus part. And so with that, then you have this maybe kind of reinforcing Jairus as they're going on the way to Jairus' house in order to heal his daughter. Now, unfortunately, you have something else that comes up when the people come out of the house and they say, hey, your daughter is already dead. Don't bother the teacher anymore. Just come back and start the funeral planning process. And as Jesus hears that, Jesus, you know, says, you know, don't worry, just believe. And there's this kind of sense of like, okay, connect this up with the lady who felt like she was completely hopeless, but she believed if she could reach out and touch my hem, then that faith healed her. Your faith will then result in the healing of your daughter. So he takes only his few disciples along with him, only his inner circle with him, with the mother and the father, and they go into her bedroom, and he says this thing, this Talitha cum. Now, Talitha cum means little girl, get up. It's in Aramaic, and so it's probably something that would have been sort of personal sounding. It would have been sort of sentimental sounding. It would have been like, hey, little girl, get up, you know, something that you would say to your kid. And because of that, Jesus is using this much more tender language with this girl, and she gets up, and he says, give her something to eat, just to kind of prove that she's going to be eating, and this is real. She's doing okay. That was a sign that you were doing all right. If you could eat something and maybe hold it down, that you were then completely healed. Now, if you notice here, unlike with the Gentile guy, you're back in Jerusalem, you're back in Judea, rather, and here Jesus goes back to the messianic secret. He says, don't tell anybody about this. And so that mystery of the messianic secret continues to be a thing. So then after that, you get Jesus goes from this place to his hometown of Nazareth. Now, Nazareth would have been sort of at a crossroads. It would have been a place that was very close to the Gentile areas, but it wasn't quite a Gentile area itself. So it would have been still Jewish, but just kind of on the border. And here Jesus is coming to his hometown. Now, the way that Mark writes this, it appears that Jesus arrives in his hometown, that he's there for at least a couple of days before the Sabbath comes. And so you have a real distinct difference. Jesus, it seems like every place else he's been going, you know, immediately people are coming up to him, they're getting healed, there's all of this miraculous stuff. Here, Jesus goes to Nazareth, and everything kind of quiets down, and you know, nobody gets healed. And it's kind of this weird moment. And in fact, when Jesus goes to the synagogue on the Sabbath, then, you know, people start to really question, hey, and we know who this guy is. And it's possible that they're looking back to Mark 3, where Jesus's own family thought that he was maybe a little bit crazy. And maybe that word has gotten back in me. So maybe they're kind of wondering who this guy is. And either way, whatever the reasoning is, that you know, Jesus recognizes that, and he says, well, a prophet is not without honor except in his hometown and among his family, and I'm not with honor here. And so he then summons his 12 disciples, and he sends them out. And he sends them out into the area that's there, the kind of Jewish area that is around. And because of the brevity of what Mark has put together here, you really going to get a sense of, you know, how little it is that the disciples are supposed to bring along with them. They just don't get to take a lot with them. And so it brings up the, you know, this kind of interesting question of, you know, like, oh, well, why is Jesus so adamant about they need to not take a whole bunch of stuff when they go? But right after he sends them out, you get this interlude story, which is another interesting like little piece of writing here that Mark does for us. So it's almost like he sends them out and he knows that, oh, okay, well, we have to wait a few beats before they come back. And so in that time, I'm going to tell you about Herod. And so during that time, we get this story about John the Baptist and Herod and what happens. So Herod is this, this terrible figure. He is a different Herod than the Herod that Jesus grew up with, but still related. And so you've got this guy who is sleeping with his brother's wife and really treating her as a wife, and yet he's kind of intrigued by John the Baptist, but still wants to keep him in prison. He's still kind of, you know, on the fence about who he is. He doesn't quite understand him, but he wants to keep him around. But Herodias, you can kind of tell, doesn't want him to be around, because at the very moment that she can, she sends in Salome. Salome is the traditional name for the girl who dances here, and she dances, and Herod likes this, that you are able to read in sexually into all of that if you want to. We don't know for sure, but there's probably something there. And she dances. Herod is pleased. He's probably also drunk, and he promises up to half of his kingdom. And the girl says, well, I don't know what to ask for. I'm going to go ask mom. And mom says immediately, right off the bat, first thing on her mind is, well, what I want is I want John the Baptist's head. And sure enough, she gets it. Herod doesn't want to do it, but he feels like he's roped in because he's there in front of all of his guests. And he kills John the Baptist by beheading him. And then the last thing that we hear about it is that John's disciples come and they bury his body. And so there's that kind of interlude that happens, which this is something that it seems like Mark is doing in order to point us forward to the cross. So Mark's entire gospel really is pointing us to the cross. It's trying to get us to the cross as quickly as possible. It's pointing us to the cross all the time. It's leaving these kind of breadcrumb things as we're looking toward the cross. And so this is one of those examples of, you've got some connections here between what's happening with Jesus and what's happening with John. So John is kind of betrayed, and he's put to death by somebody who's a little bit reluctant to put him to death, just like Pilate would have been. And he's betrayed by, you know, somebody who is told what to say, sort of like the crowds in Jerusalem were told what to say by the chief priests and the scribe. And so you have a lot of connection here. So Mark is constantly sort of pointing us toward the cross and showing us, okay, this cross, this is the most important thing that there is about Jesus. And so as we finish up with that, Jesus' disciples finally come back. They're haggard, they're tired, and so Jesus says, well, let's go and let's get away. There's all of these people that continue to kind of run after them. It says they don't even have time to eat. This is the second time that Mark has used that as a explanation of just how little time they have. They don't have enough time to eat, and so Jesus says, well, let's get away, and so they try to get away, but then as they're arriving, they see, oh, we didn't get away at all. In fact, the crowds are right here. And Jesus has compassion on the crowds. And he says, well, we need to feed them. We're healing them. We're talking to them. We need to feed them as well. And the disciples are like, where are we going to get food enough? Yeah, they mentioned 200 denarii. That's 200 days labor would feed them. That would probably just feed them, you know, just kind of give them enough to get through the kind of like a meager lunch. And yet Jesus says, well, I want you to go and I want you to find out how much you actually have. And they said, well, oh, we've got 5 loaves. And by the way, we've got 2 fish as well. And then Jesus does this thing where he says, okay, now I want you to go and I want you to separate them into groups of hundreds and fifties. And you really get this sense, out of Mark's telling at least here, that what Jesus is doing is he's setting up a new kind of nation. That this calls back a lot of memories about what would have been the case around the new people of Israel as they were gathered around Moses. And you've got that same kind of idea here that Mark is showing us. Okay, Jesus, what he has come to do is in order to create a new Israel. This new Israel is going to be created in his name. That's why he chooses 12 disciples, because they're the leaders of the 12 new tribes. And so you have that kind of interesting thing happening with the 5,000. Now, after the feeding of the 5,000, Jesus does this sort of strange thing. He tells the disciples, okay, I'm going to go and I'm going to dismiss the people. You guys go on ahead. Now, when the disciples are getting in the boat, apparently nobody is saying, well, how is Jesus going to catch up with us? We have a boat. He doesn't have a boat. Is he going to go around the lake? We don't know how that happens. But it doesn't matter because Jesus already has planned. Okay, well, I'm just going to walk across the Sea of Galilee. And the way that Mark tells it, it almost seems like Jesus wants to do this by secret and kind of meet them on the other side and be like, surprise. But instead, what happens is that Jesus is walking and they catch him and they say, oh, it's a ghost. And Jesus has to calm them down and say, I'm not a ghost. Now, interesting also here is that we're talking about the Gospel of Mark. Now, the Gospel of Mark traditionally and pretty reliably is written by somebody who is taking notes from Peter. So in this story where we know from Matthew that Peter has a part in the story where he says to Jesus, if it really is you, let me come out there and walk with you. That story doesn't show up here at all, even though it's Peter's notes that we're working from. So it's just kind of an interesting head scratcher. Like, I wonder why he didn't choose to include that. It's possible that the reason is that Mark wants to kind of retain this idea of the disciples being a unit instead of sort of one disciple or another kind of popping out. So after Jesus walks on the water and he gets back in the boat, we end up in the same place that we started, it seems like. There's this area of Gennesaret, which is actually just sort of another way of saying Gerasenes, the place that we started off. And here we have, yet again, people are responding to Jesus in a very positive way. They know who he is. They know that he's coming. And because of that, they see that, you know, he's coming and they're bringing all of the sick to come and be healed by him. You even have, apparently, word got around about the woman with the flow of blood because you have this specific mention of the people that are reaching out to touch the hem of his garment, which is what she did. And so it's kind of like they learn, oh, well, all you have to do is you have to touch him. And if you have faith, then you'll be healed. And so it's this, again, kind of an interesting thing that Jesus is doing here and the people are responding to him in this way. Well, that is the end of chapter 6 for us. We're so glad that you are with us for this journey. We hope that it is bringing you closer to Jesus, and as a result of that, bringing you closer to the other Christians that are in your life. We do appreciate you being here, and we look forward to talking to you next time. So talk to you later, and God's blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this media from University Lutheran Church and Student Center. To learn more and to get connected to other resources, please visit universitylutheranchurch.org. If you would like to financially support more media from University Lutheran, please visit our website and click the Give Now button, which will enable you to engage in the Christian discipline of giving tithes and offerings to God through His church. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord lift up his face upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord look upon you with favor and give you peace.